This is The Baseline, discussing the hot button topics of the NBA.
Welcome, everybody. You're tuned to The Baseline. Cal Lee, Warren Shaw, discussing the hot button topics of the NBA, our 2017 Eastern Conference playoff preview. We break down the top eight teams that made it through. Now, they give themselves a chance to try and represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals. And to do it, they got to get through the first round. Eight teams. It's all going down. A lot of topic, a lot of analysis, great guests. You know how we do, baby. It's time to roll. Let me roll out the red carpet to my right-hand man, 50 grand NBA aficionado, www.shawsports.net, Big Kahuna PNC, my brother from another mother, Mr. Warren Shaw, repping out of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Holla back at me, Mr. Shaw. Are you ready to talk some Eastern Conference playoff basketball, man?
Absolutely, man. This is a great time. Great time to be alive. NBA playoffs are right here. We are right on the cusp of seeing some great basketball for the next couple months before we close on out and head into free agency and the draft and everything like that. But salute to all the fans and listeners of NBA Baseline. Thank you so much for supporting us throughout the entire regular season. So nice we had to do it twice. Hateful Eight Part 2. Talk about that Eastern Conference, bro.
Yeah, man. Two great guests that we're going to have on board to help break down the eight teams, the four matchups that'll be taking place in this first round. Our man from Hoop Mag, Josh Eberle, he'll be on board in a little bit. And our brother from another mother. It's been a while since we brought him back to the fold, but he has returned like the prodigal son to talk the truth to the NBA masses. Our man, Gerald Brown from the Bottom Line Sports Show. We got the round table. We've been doing it. We do it big like no other. I'm glad we get to do it again. We break it down like no other, man. So it's really great to have these guys on board to help us get some more insight on these matchups and what's going to be a great first round of NBA basketball to be played. Once again, get at my man Shaw at Shaw Sports NBA or get at me at Gameface Lee. We encourage you to get the show's Twitter handle at NBA Baseline. Available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Microsoft TuneIn, Player FM, iHeartRadio, Roku Channel, and Google Music. So download any one of these platforms and allow us to be your go-to resource discussing all things NBA. Be sure to check us out on www.16windsorring.com, the website that covers the NBA like no other. Great NBA content, and yours truly, the Baseline NBA Podcast, features our shows on 16 Windsor Ring. So be sure to head out to the website and get your fill for this upcoming playoff season. You know how we do, and you know how we roll. It's time now.
Time to break it down.
Put you down to the bone gristle.
Time now for the breakdown. Cal Lee, Warren Shaw of the Baseline NBA Podcast. And
you only need to hang mean bastards. But mean bastards you need to hang.
That right there is the sentiment I'm sure that the other seven teams in the Eastern Conference feel about the Cleveland Cavaliers. Because while they are listed as the two seed, they are still certainly considered to be the best team that's expected to come out of the East. As we kick off our coverage of the first round of the playoffs, Hateful Eight style, and we preview these first four series matchups to take place. To do that in a little bit, we have our man from the Bottom Line Sports Show, our boy Gerald Brown. He's going to be hopping on board. And then we also have with us, he definitely knows his hoops. He covers it through Hoops Mag. We've had him on earlier this year. To help us break down these matchups, we got our man, Josh Eberle. Josh, thanks for hopping on board with us for a little bit here so we could talk about these first round matchups, man.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to be on here and chopping it up with you.
All right. So let's get right into it, Josh. We're going to start off with the 1-8 matchup. And the only reason why I'm doing that is because I'm sure Shaw would lace into me if we didn't have something to say about those pesky Chicago Bulls and how they found their way into this NBA playoffs. Because, you know, according to the law of Shaw, the Bulls had no business being in this year's NBA playoffs. And yet the matchup between the Celtics and the Bulls are so intriguing, because while the Celtics may have earned their entitlement of being the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, for whatever reason, no one is feeling confident that they should be walking through this first round. So I like to kind of get the temperature a little bit on how you see this matchup playing itself out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with the law of Shaw. I think nobody really wanted to see the Chicago Bulls here. I actually know Bulls fans who didn't even really want to see the Bulls here. They just have been a pretty miserable up and down team all year, but they can thank Jimmy Butler for the playoff games that they're going to get. He's been absolutely crazy down the stretch, should be all NBA this year. I really don't think this is going to be a sweep. I think the Celtics are going to pull through. They're obviously, it's a 1-8 matchup. It is what it is. But the Celtics are, for lack of a better word, a fake one seed, kind of like the 2015 Atlanta Hawks. Yeah, they're there. Yeah, they got the spot. Good for them. Nice feather in the cap. But we all don't respect them as the best team in the Eastern Conference. Nobody really thinks they're going to the title. And I think other teams know that too. So I would look for this to go 5-6 games and for it to be semi-competitive for a 1-8 matchup.
That's tough, man. So I like how you're going there, because I think I'm with you in that. And the fake one seed, you know what I mean? Like, I think this is where Boston really is kind of caught in their own success to some degree. The Celtics are not the best team in the Eastern Conference. And I don't care what the record says. They've kind of fallen into the one seed, almost in the same way the Chicago Bulls have fell into the eighth seed. So I think this is going to be a very competitive matchup throughout. And what concerns me a little bit is when you have veteran guys of the ilk of Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade, and even Rajon Rondo, with that little bit of extra added spice against playing against his old team, you know, for all the marbles here in the playoffs, I think the Bulls are going to be a tough, tough out for the Boston Celtics. And I guess what I would like to ask you kind of back in return now is, how do you feel, in essence, the Celtics are going to move with their offense? Does somebody else now really need to kind of be like that number two? Do we finally see Al Horford kind of take that role? Or do you feel like it still just kind of runs through IT and everybody just kind of chips in where depending on how the game flows?
Yeah. You know what? They do need to find somebody, and it might not, you know, they might skate by in Chicago because they are an 8 seed, because they are a mess. And I think the Bulls are going to hurt themselves if they try to push Wade back into the starting lineup, because the Bulls have been way better with Wade off the court than they have with him on the court. But again, I Chicago has the size to make Thomas work, whether it's Butler, whether it's Wade, whether it's Rondo. These are bigger guards that can play some defense, make life really hard on them. So they do need to find that second option. Al Horford is a guy who has stepped up at the end of the season here, but he's also a guy we've never really seen be overly aggressive in the playoff series. As great as he's been throughout his career, he's never been a guy that I would say, quote unquote, dominated. So they do need to find somebody else in the team that can come in, step in, and do that. But I don't know if it's the same necessity this round as it will be the next round.
All right. And with us, and who's able to jump on board to help us break down further about the Celtics and the Bulls, we got our man from the Bottom Line Sports Show, Gerald Brown. Gerald, thanks for hopping on board to help us talk Eastern Conference playoff basketball, brother.
Always a pleasure, man. Guys are family. Nothing but love for you, man.
All right. Listen, one of the things that I think that we thought about when the Celtics and the Bulls kind of get thrown out there, you know, there could be like a historical context to this. And it's historical in the sense that no one's expecting the Boston Celtics to be better than the Chicago Bulls because of the roster that the Bulls tend to have, like what they have. You know, they have Wade, they have Rondo, then they got Butler, and these are playoff guys, and, you know, these are high caliber guys, and then the Celtics have Isaiah Thomas. But why should people really buy into the Celtics really being that good of a basketball team, at least good enough that they should get past the Chicago Bulls?
I don't know. I think, you know what, you know, granted, in all of the failures of the Cleveland Cavaliers, they were the ones that really benefited from it the most. And let's be honest, Isaiah Thomas has had a MVP type of season. He's going to get some strong consideration. But overall, I just think that, you know what, they showed at times, you know, and they benefited from a Washington team that struggled somewhat. Toronto really losing Kyle Lowry. They were the next team up. So this team does have some, you know, some type of weapons, but I think it's not a situation where I think inevitably, listen, anybody that believes that the Boston Celtics are really the best team in the Eastern Conference, I got a bridge in New Jersey that I really want to sell you. That's unbelievable. Connects to Manhattan, New York. It's amazing. I can sell you that bridge. I can give you all the specs. I'll give it to you for a great price.
Well, speaking of that bridge, who do you like crossing that bridge with ease? That's gonna help push the Celtics to that next round. Outside of Isaiah Thomas, who else should they be leaning on to make sure that they get the job done against the Bulls?
Well, I think more than ever, it's gonna be a combination of guys. But I mean, this is money time. This is why you sign Al Horford to this sort of mega contract. This is what you brought him in for. Guys like him, Amir Johnson. I don't think that they have essentially a solid number two guy to go along with Isaiah Thomas. So I think it's gonna come down to a combination of guys between Howard, Amir Johnson, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, a lot of those guys. So it's gonna be a combination, but everybody's gonna have to play a role. But you inevitably want to make sure that Al Horford is that guy that has a big, big part in the Celtics have an opportunity to move on.
All right, so how do you see this playing out with the Celtics and the Bulls? Who moves on? How many games?
I think it's going to be really, I say five. You know, I think the Bulls have been really a mess this season in terms of really on paper. You thought that this team could really, you know, do some things in terms of, yes, they didn't have the traditional outside shooting, but I thought that obviously with a guy like Rajon Rondo at the helm, Dwayne Wade, who have sort of an axe to grind and really showcased that he wasn't done, and then Jimmy Butler, who was the guy that, you know, people were saying that this is his Chicago Bulls team for quite some time since Derrick Rose went out with the injury. I thought this team would be able to do something, but you know what? Middle of the season, this team started making decisions and moves, moving on from Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott, you know, to start this sort of rebuilding process, if you will, and try to figure out the identity of this franchise. So right now, they're making the playoffs. I think inevitably, this team maybe wins one game.
All right, that's tough, right? So I mean, Shaw, how much of this are you buying? Are you willing to pay toll to cross over Gerald's Bridge that the Boston Celtics are going to kindly scoot the Chicago Bulls, put them out of their misery fairly quickly in this first round of the series?
No, I think this is a deep water series for sure. I just don't trust Boston, and it's not a discredit to what they've been able to do in the regular season, but it was the regular season, and I just don't know that they are going to be crushing people when it even comes to the playoffs. They have enough to get by Chicago, without a doubt. But I think it's going to be a six-game series. I'm worried about them with the veteran play of Wade and Butler and Rondo coming back to Boston and how motivated he's going to be. I think it's Boston, but it's going to be six games.
All right, you're tuned to The Baseline. Cal Lee, Warren Shaw discussing the hot-button topics of the NBA as we continue our coverage of the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, Hateful Eight style. So as we move things along, let's go ahead and talk about the 2-7 matchup, and that's between the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Indiana Pacers. Now, I'm sure to a lot of people, it may feel surprising that when you have a dominant LeBron James-led type team, that they would be considered as a 2-seed in any conference, which is a little bit unheard of. But we have seen this Cavaliers team go through its struggles. They are not as invincible as they've been in previous years. And here you look at an Indiana Pacers team that, while they look like a team certainly in transition, they are definitely a scrappy basketball team. And something can be said that in any first round matchup, the team that you usually don't want to play against is a team that you play throughout the course of the regular season, specifically in your division. And the Indiana Pacers, down the stretch when they needed to win games to get themselves in the playoffs, have proven to be a formidable foe to the Cleveland Cavaliers. So while all of us feel with a level of confidence that the Cavaliers should get out of the first round, my question to you, Gerald, is how certain can that be? Is there any inclination or inkling that the Indiana Pacers can certainly push or maybe even expose the Cavaliers in this first round matchup that leads us to believe that they are not the same basketball team and this is not as easy a run as it has been over the last two seasons where they have utterly dominated this conference?
You know, I think this is going to go five. I think clearly, you know, Indiana has really been a mess, and honestly, I truly believe in some regard they still might make a move. I wouldn't be surprised in the offseason if Larry Bird decided to step down, because just if you look up the look at the makeup of this team, they're one of these teams that's going to have to deal with what Oklahoma City had to deal with last year, upcoming next season, where the question is if Paul George is going to remain there or he will go ahead and move on. So that's going to be really interesting. But on the flip side, you know, Cleveland, at times, I believe they're just a bored team. I think inevitably they can turn that switch on. But, you know, it's something where, honestly, if you look at them, and one of the things I've been trying to wrap my head around is this team, I believe in, like Josh said, they have enough talent to get in the East, to win the East. They have enough talent to get to the finals, hands down. But I don't think they have the chemistry like they had last year to win it all. I mean, think about this. You know, yes, we're looking at the Cavs and clearly say that they should be the overall favorites to get to the NBA Finals and they should win it. But think about what they did last year, coming back from a 3-1 deficit and winning for a city that was considered, you know, outside of Chicago Cubs, the lovable losers, you know, and getting that sort of gorilla off their back and what they were able to do. They've hit some road speed bumps along the way this year, but I still believe that this team really can turn it on. And I think inevitably they've just been bored. So I think they'll come out in five and get rid of these guys and move forward.
Yeah, well, for Indiana, I mean, we all know what Paul George is going to give the Pacers. You know, he's definitely, you know, one of the second best player on the floor behind LeBron James, and I think that's undisputable. But he's going to need the help, and it has to come from the guys like Miles Turner and Thaddeus Young. You know, Miles Turner started off the season very, very hot, and it seemed like he hit some sort of wall. And I heard there were some issues, like this, with his confidence. He wasn't shooting some of the shots that, you know, that he was taking earlier in the year, and they had to talk to him about that. I'm not buying into this Lance Stephenson being, you know, the firecracker and, you know, whatever, everything that Indiana needs. But I'm looking at Miles Turner and even a little bit of Thaddeus Young to kind of produce for the Pacers to make this a series for them. And regarding Cleveland, you know, I'm in the middle, I think, of both of Gerald and Joshua, because I'll never bet against LeBron James. So they're obviously going to win the series. You know, I don't think that's even a question here. But that switch, I don't know if it's there. And I think my discussion is, I think it's going to get turned on at some point, but not necessarily in this series. So they slug it out. And it's going to be probably, you know, a 5 or 6 game series. And I'll give them the gentleman sweep, say they'll do it in 5. But I think it's going to be 5 hard fought games. And then as the playoffs go on, and maybe in that next round against Toronto, you see them start to kind of figure some things out.
Josh, you had mentioned before that you see that the Indiana Pacers can't possibly give the Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, some fits. Just from the perspective of the Cleveland Cavaliers, what is it that you'd be looking for that gives you at least a little bit more confidence that this team is playoff ready, and that they are going to take this series very seriously, given the fact that the Indiana Pacers have played the Cleveland Cavaliers very well down the stretch of the regular season to position themselves to even be in this playoffs?
Yeah, I guess if that's the question, then it's taking care of the first two at home. I mean, Indiana's the worst team on the road in the Eastern Conference playoffs, period. If you're the Cavs, you got to come out strong. You got to take those two games. And then if you lose one on the road, you know, as we all kind of predicted, the gentleman's sweep plays out. But if you lose one of those first games at home, then you give the team life. Then you start to second guess things. As Gerald mentioned, the chemistry just hasn't been there this year. Whether there is or isn't a switch, you don't want to have to turn on the switch. You don't want to have to go to the Tyronn Lue secret plan in round one. You want to save that secret plan and that switch for when you really need it. And you don't want to have to use it in game 2 or 3 against Indiana.
All right, well, there you have it. The Cleveland Cavaliers expected to roll past the Indiana Pacers. But can the Pacers, you know, gather up a little bit of gumption and make the road a little bit tougher than Cleveland? They usually say you hang around long enough and you start putting doubts in people's ears, eyes, mouths. And maybe for a Lance Stephenson, he could blow that all out of proportion if the Pacers can make a push in this first round. You're tuned to The Baseline. Cal Lee, Warren Shaw discussing the hot-button topics of the NBA, our Eastern Conference playoff preview with our special guests Josh Eberle and Gerald Brown. All right, let's go ahead and focus our attention now on that illustrious 3-6 matchup, where the team that everyone seemed to have forgotten during the second half of the season, and the team that everyone seems enamored with in the second half of the season, the Toronto Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks. And, you know, I just wish that the Bucks just had all of their players, because this would probably be the most intriguing first round matchup when you look at the roster that the Toronto Raptors have put together, and you look at what potentially the Milwaukee Bucks could have, especially after the season of Giannis Antetokounmpo. Josh, I'm going to start with you, man. What are your expectations for Toronto? What are your expectations for Milwaukee? And who are your X factors that's going to really make decide the outcome of this particular series?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is an interesting series, but it really shouldn't be, right? I mean, you look at this Raptors team, it's the deepest team the Raptors have ever had in the 22 years they've had a franchise. It's the most talented team they've ever had. Lowry's back, he's healthy. The rest before the playoffs might actually let him have a playoff run where he's not dinged up. But you can't just give it to the Raptors. You can't just let them roll on, because they've shown repeatedly to struggle once they get the playoffs. There's a switch that goes the opposite way for Toronto, that when they get to the playoffs, DeRozan and Lowry have these terrible shooting woes and things just seem to break down. So honestly, as a Canadian, I'm worried about these guys because I don't know where their heads are at sometimes when the playoffs start. I think this is going to be a really tough series. I think it's going to go 6 or 7. I think PJ Tucker might be the difference maker for Toronto. He's going to get down on Giannis. He's going to play him tough. He's gritty. He's going to beat him to his spots. He gives up some size, but that's the guy they got to stop. And really, the Bucks' offense struggles. I mean, as good as long as they are, as great as the defense can be at times, they find a hard time scoring consistently outside of Giannis. And with Parker out, they're going to lead on Middleton, who he hasn't even got a half a season in. If the Bucks have an X factor, it's going to be someone off the bench who has a signature game, a typical, you know, playoff become a hero game where they score 30 or 40. I'm looking at Teletovich, Beasley. They're going to have to find contributions from someone to match the Raptors scoring from their backcourt.
Darryl, who are your intriguing characters to be looking out for in this series? I want to see if whether or not DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry get off to a much better playoff start than they've shown over the last couple of seasons. This is the type of tandem that people have been talking about being the best duo backcourt, not just in the Eastern Conference, but practically in the NBA to some degree. And given what DeMar DeRozan has done in this regular season, it would be hard-pressed for me to think that he does not do a better job of getting off to a better start, especially with Kyle Lowry. There's really no excuses that this is the type of basketball team that should find themselves playing deep in this playoffs, but it can't happen if they have the kind of start that they had last year.
Well, if Cal, with you saying that, I mean, I wonder right now, could we all be in for a premiere or another debut of DeMar DeRozan showcasing a shoestring and blaming and bringing out the shoestring inevitably to help his game and stuff, like we saw in last year's NBA playoffs. I think, you know what, the intriguing player on both sides that really stand out is, you know, Malcolm Brogdon, young man, and I think should get some consideration, or if not win it, the rookie of the year. But look, Milwaukee's a very young team. And like Josh alluded to, this team really struggles. Young team that's still trying to find themselves. We see that this is a team that they like to get up and go. You know, the easy transition offense led by Giannis Antetokounmpo, that is their sort of forte. And then on the flip side of that, what Dwayne Casey has done in Toronto, you know, I'm a huge, huge fan of Dwayne Casey. And just the grit and grind of this Toronto Raptors team. The thing that concerns me about it, I know you said in terms of intriguing players, I will throw another one there. Kyle Lowry, he missed a lot of time. How much rust will he show in that first-round series? But I believe that based upon what Toronto has in terms of just really led by the experience of guys like DeMar DeRozan and Lowry, they should have no problems advancing to the second round. But it's going to be entertaining. It'll be entertaining.
All right, Shaw, so you look at this Milwaukee Bucks team, and to Gerald's point, this could be an entertaining basketball game. Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, you know, they can combine for about 48 points against the Toronto Raptors. So clearly there's some advantages there. I don't know how much of an impact they are going to be now with the additions of Ibaka and PJ Tucker, who, remember on our show, you know, just a week ago, Tamberlin Richardson was shooting from the mountaintop about how PJ Tucker should be given considerations, you know, as a defensive player of the year in, you know, in the untold story, like the unspoken hero segment, you know. Can Giannis Antetokounmpo dazzle people? It's not like he hasn't been in the playoffs before. Remember, he did it against the Chicago Bulls, right? When Derrick Rose was a Bull. So Giannis is really one of the few players that has playoff experience. And he could be a person that can use his size and his versatility to be a matchup problem for the Raptors. How much is this going to come down to the Carroll-Tucker combination neutralizing Antetokounmpo to give the Bucks even a puncher's chance at taking some games in this series?
Well, I think it's really going to depend on Kidd and the type of offensive sets that he runs for Giannis. You know, if Tucker's trying to guard him straight up, then that's going to be a tough matchup for both of them. Like, they're going to wear each other down throughout the series. I feel like Kidd is going to have to run some actions that gets Giannis on some switches, and I don't know if it's even something as simple as straight pick and rolls, where Tucker has to kind of get sucked in by the big man. What I'm confused about, though, is Jason Kidd's rotation in terms of that center position. I've been harping on this all year. That center position continues to be a revolving door. You know, Thon Maker, I think, is manning it right now. You know, and they've had just, and John Henson's been in and out of the lineup, and Monroe was coming off the bench. You know, when Josh said a little bit early on, like, somebody's going to take somebody to have to play some hero ball, Beasley's probably the most likely guy because of just from a scoring standpoint. But Monroe is a guy who hasn't really seen more than 25 minutes a night in a good couple months now. So if he comes out there and he gets hot, maybe he can kind of help stem the tide a little bit. But I'm concerned for them on the flip side with Jonas Valanciunas, because he's had some monster games in the playoffs these couple of years. And last year he got hurt and then was kind of never the same after he got back. But he can really control the glass for Toronto, in addition to what Ibaka and PJ Tucker are going to bring for them. That's why I think, you know, the Raptors are probably going to take this one out. But again, I agree with everybody here. It's going to be a great series to watch.
So how many games and who moves on?
I got the Toronto Raptors in 6.
All right. Well, there you have it. The number 3 seed has a 92-58 record in the first rounds of NBA playoffs. And so the idea or the premise here is that, you know, the Toronto Raptors are clearly in the driver's seat. They're the more experienced team. Let's see if the experience wears down the young Bucks. You're tuned to The Baseline. Cali Warren Shaw discussing the hot button topics of the NBA as we continue our coverage of previewing the Eastern Conference playoffs with our special guests, Josh Eberle and Gerald Brown. All right, so now that we have taken care of 3 of the 4 teams, this might be the one where we may get to see a glimpse of, can they do it? Can they not do it? Like, everybody knows that the Atlanta Hawks are the Atlanta Hawks. I don't think anybody is, you know, resting on the broad shoulders of Dwight Howard to do like he did back in the days with the Orlando Magic and, you know, getting his teams to playing in Eastern Conference Finals championships and things of that nature. But I think a lot of people are eyeing the Washington Wizards, and can this be the time of John Wall and Bradley Beal? They've been teasing us over the last few years. They have certainly underachieved, like the last 2 seasons, but they've been in the playoffs. And this is an opportunity where they've played big against the better teams in the NBA, especially teams like the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Boston Celtics. So the expectations are, how far can this Wizards team go, or are we just sipping on the Kool-Aid? So I'm going to start with you, Gerald. You look at this matchup between the Wizards and the Hawks. Is a dominant performance by the Washington Wizards sustainable, or can they be bit by the hype machine because of the expectations that they put on themselves for what they've done the regular season with a Hawks team that has been in the playoffs over the last 3 seasons?
Absolutely not. I really believe in this Washington Wizards team, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, I do believe that this was a matchup a few years back where inevitably led to the Atlanta Hawks, I think, getting the monkey off their back and getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think it really was all predicated on the fact that John Wall had, I think, the bones or something, broken bones in his hand or wrist or something like that. But the Washington Wizards is probably one of the most intriguing teams, if not the most intriguing team in the NBA this season. You talk about a team that the start that they got off to, We had the early, you know, shenanigans between John Wall saying him and, you know, Bradley Beal didn't get along, you know, at a point where they, you know, clearly said that they had the best backcourt in the league, and yet they caught fire, and yet they've been able to remain healthy first and foremost. And the job that Scott Brooks has done this season, you know, he needs to get some consideration for Coach of the Year. I look at Atlanta, you know, Atlanta, they obviously decided to keep, you know, Paul Millsap. He's sort of their cowbell guy and really gets a lot of this stuff done. But it's the same thing. I don't think they have enough offensive firepower. I would be shocked if this team is able to advance past the Washington Wizards. Hands down, the Washington Wizards will be moving on. And I think they'll probably do it in maybe six games, if that.
All right, so the power of the Washington Wizards has overwhelmed our man, Gerald Brown. Josh, what about you? Are you buying into the Washington Wizards and the emergence of John Wall? I mean, you know, aside of the historical efforts of James Harden and Russell Westbrook and Kawhi Leonard, you know, there were some actual talks about John Wall being thrown in that conversation as to having an MVP-like season, which they definitely needed from him when they were going through their struggles at the beginning of this season to see where they are now. A lot of people are thinking that they are the best fit team that could actually give the Cleveland Cavaliers a run for their money.
Yeah, I think it's even bigger than Wall. I mean, Wall has been excellent. He's had a career year. Like you said, in a lot of other years, he might have got MVP hype. But these two teams met 2 years ago. It was a competitive series. It was a six-game series. Wall didn't shoot well. The younger Wizards weren't great yet. And this is a different team. I mean, these are two different teams. Atlanta is not as good. They've lost Horford. They were kind of confused with their direction most of the year. The Wizards have been great. And again, it's bigger than Wall. I mean, Otto Porter's having probably the best year of his career. Brad Beal's having the best year of his career. And honestly, could have been an all-star. I really think this Wizards team is a lot better than they look on paper. We kind of talked about earlier how we didn't feel like the Boston team overwhelmed us. I think this Washington team is very good, and I don't see any difference between them and Boston at the top of the conference. Or they're right there with Cleveland and Toronto. I think it's going to be a short series, actually. I think Washington's going to take care of them in five.
Wow. Shaw, I think you call that the gentleman's sweep.
Oh, so that is the favorite basketball Twitter term, yes.
Yeah. So let me go ahead and whip out my broomstick for you and bless us with a little bit of basketball witchery. How do you see this thing playing out? Do you think that the Atlanta Hawks can at least push the Washington Wizards or can even be able to best the Washington Wizards? Is there an upset on the horizon? Because our consensus panel is saying no.
Yeah, no, you've gone too far. The Atlanta Hawks have been way too inconsistent this year for me to think that they can upset the Washington Wizards in this series. We've had our discussions on, you know, on our show without the guests, and you know, I'm a big fan of what Washington has been able to do kind of in season. Yes, they slowed down kind of post All-Star, had all those West Coast games and actually won a good handful of them, but kind of just slowed down and their defense kind of abandoned them a little bit. Bogdanovich had got hurt after, you know, getting over there and coming up to a hot start. But I agree wholeheartedly with Joshua. I felt like this Wizards team was actually a better team than the Boston Celtics. They were playing defense. They had more options offensively. And then they had, you know, great superstars in terms of John Wall and Bradley Beal. Gortat has kind of tailed off a little bit, and I understand that. But I think this is a very good basketball team who is going to be able to turn it around and make quick work of this Atlanta Hawks team, who I do respect. Because they're extremely well coached, and that's what's gotten Atlanta even to where they are right now. I don't think they're overly talented. Schroeder hasn't had the season that I thought he would have had being a starter this year. But I still feel like Washington is just going to go ahead and do what we talk about here, give them that gentleman sweep and get the Hawks on out of here.
Real quick, do you and I guess this question is more posed to all three of you guys. So I'll start with Josh, and then I'll end all the way to Shaw. So Gerald, I'll have you chime in on this. Do you see this being a high-scoring affair? Because I'd like to think the Atlanta Hawks have the propensity to slow the game down and make it more defensive-minded in order to give themselves a chance. Do you think that the Washington Wizards figure out a way to break the defense of the Atlanta Hawks and really just make it a shootout, which I think definitely favor a John Wall-led type basketball team? Josh, let's start with you.
Yeah, I don't think the pace is going to be wild. You know, this Wizards team, for as crazy as they've been offensively this year, has kind of had a knack in the playoffs to slow down, too. The year that we were talking about before where they met, the games weren't super high scoring. A couple years before that, or a year before that, I remember the Wizards and the Bulls just had one of the most brutal series defensively, like 67, 69 points for winning games. It's crazy. I think the Hawks are still going to play some defense. You know, you gave them the gentleman's sweep because that's what they do, because Paul Millsap is a soldier. I think that it's going to be an interesting series. I think the Wizards are going to impress people and maybe have some people believing that they're better than the seed that they're in. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be a wildly fast-paced game.
I agree with Josh. I think one thing we do know about the Atlanta Hawks is although they cannot score, they can play defense. But, you know, just to add one thing to this whole series, the health has really been, you know, obviously a healthy John Wall and Bradley Beal makes a big, big difference, along with Gortat, to name a few, of guys being healthy, even throwing Otto Porter, who guys missed a lot of time last year. But those guys being healthy, I don't think that this will be an up-and-down type of game because we all know what the playoffs are all about. And especially in the Eastern Conference, you know what, that things slow down. But I think that we will see a Washington Wizards team that will have no problem getting good shot selection and really getting high volume shots, especially from guys like Wall and Bradley Beal. I think this series, hands down, I think what we're going to see, especially going to the second round, you're going to really see exactly the eye-opener of that backcourt of John Wall and Bradley Beal.
Right, and for me, the Wizards, I don't think, like I said, it's not going to be terribly high scoring. I'm surprised Beal has stayed as healthy as he was this year, and that has always been the issue for the Wizards and kind of the key to their success, in addition to John Wall, too. So I think because I keep alluding to Coach Bud being a great coach, he will be able to find ways to maybe control some of the pace at times here and there, and we'll see this, you know, we'll see the game be in the mid-90s and things like that. I know nothing like that drudgery that Josh was talking about previously, because I remember those series. It was terrible basketball to watch in the playoffs. But again, Washington is just, they're just too good, and they should come out and play and perform to the best of their capabilities.
All right. Well, there you have it. Just a plethora of information for our listeners to soak up and gather themselves and to be prepared for what's going to be some great NBA basketball to be played as the Eastern Conference playoffs kick off this upcoming weekend. Once again, we'd like to thank our special guests, our man Josh Eberle, our man Gerald Brown. Thank you so much, brothers, for hopping on board, blessing us with a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of food for thought, and, you know, the occasional gentleman sweep here and there. So at least we know what we're going to be excited to watch for, what we're not going to be excited to watch for in the first round of the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Definitely. My pleasure, man. Always a pleasure getting on the air with you brothers and stuff like that. Nothing but love for you. Continue to do what y'all do, man.
Yeah, love being on the show, guys. Thanks for having me on. Truly appreciate it.
Most definitely. Once again, we'd like to thank all of our guests who have been a part of this project, the Hateful Eight series, covering the first round matchups of the NBA playoffs, Eastern and Western conferences, respectively. And again, big shout outs to our man Statline 247, our man Nick, for giving us the graphical inspiration to put this together. Hey, NBA playoffs is kicking off. You guys enjoy it. We'll be here giving you exactly what you need to know and what you need to hear as we prep you for the run to the O'Brien Trophy. For the Baseline, Cali, Warren Shaw, we appreciate you guys. You know we do. Enjoy the playoffs, and we'll catch up with you next time.